Okay, in this week's very long parshas, among the things that are discussed is the Milchemes Midyan. If you remember, not that long ago, there was an issue that came up with Balak and Bilam, and eventually Midyan got the better of us, and the 24,000 of Bnei Yisrael were killed out because of what had happened with them. So now it's payback time. And in fact, I don't want to ruin the parsha for anyone who hasn't read it yet, but I will tell you that ultimately we are successful in the Milchemes Midyan. It's a major victory, and with all good victories come the spoils. Now, among the things that came in the spoils were pots and pans. So therefore now...
Kaylin.
So therefore, at this point, God has to explain to Bnei Yisrael, these pots and pans were not kosher. How, if you're going to use them, you have to make them kosher first. So looking at number one, which is in Parshas Matos, Vayomer Elazar HaKohen al Anshei HaTzava HaBom HaNochama Zos Chukas HaTorah Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. Elazar tells the people when they're coming back, I got a rule to tell you. Aches ha-zahav ves ha-kesev ves es ha-nechoshes es ha-barzel es ha-bedil ves ha-ofares. Anything that you have here that's made out of gold or silver
or copper
or lead or tin or tin or iron, kol davar she-yavo ba-eish taviyu ba-eish v'taher. Ach b'mein nida yischata v'chol asher lo yavo ba-eish taviyu ba-mayim. Anything that was used on fire, with fire, you're going to have to use with fire now as well. And anything that wasn't used, that was used through water, you're going to have to pass it through water. And everything has to be tovel. So we learned two different important halachas from this pasuk. One is what we're not going to discuss tonight, but we have been discussing in the Tuesday night kashrus year, and that is tvilas kelim. That in the event you acquire something from a non-Jew, even if you know it's kosher, right? I go to Walmart, I buy something, it's never been used before. It's kosher, I have no doubt about it. Still, you have to take it to the mikvah. Still has to be toveled these dishes. That's rule number one. The second one is, if it has been used, you have to kasher it. How do you kasher it? So the basic rules that we say is anything that was used on with fire, you have to kasher it through fire. Anything that was used through water, you have to kasher it through water. What materials are we talking about in this week's parsha? Well, there are six materials. All of them happen to be
metals.
Right? There are six metals that are listed here. Right? Metal, we know, can be kasher that way. However, if we go back to earlier on, if we go back to Parshas Tzav, so we're discussing there not something that wasn't kosher, but something that was used for hekdesh. What if I have a pot that I made a korban with? So now the korban is absorbed in this pot. Now, most korbanos, in fact, all korbanos, have expiration dates. You have to eat it in one day and one night, 2 days and two nights, one day, whatever. There are different amount of times just that night by Korban Pesach. If I leave my korban beyond that time, it is called no sir. And no sir cannot be eaten. That's why it's called that. No sir. That's why they call it that. So, therefore, what's going to happen to the pot? Inevitably, some of the carbon gets absorbed in the pot, and now the pot's going to become not kosher. Why? Because it's no sir. What can I do to fix that? So the pasuk tells us, "V'kli cheres asher tevash al bov yishaver." If it's pottery, it has to be broken. Then v'kli nechoshes bushala. But if it's done in copper, if it's done in a metal one, that can be cleaned out, that can be made kosher. So we see here that there are certain materials which, if they become non-kosher, can be koshered, and there are certain materials which cannot be koshered. Looking at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it explains it a little more. So he tells us the following rule. He says that let's take a step back. Why is it a problem if I used a pot to cook my pig in it? You know, it happens. It was an accident. Okay, now I want to use it to make noodles. Is that a problem?
No.
Why not, Marsha, out of curiosity?
In Winnemucca, you do what you have to do.
What happens in Winnemucca stays in Winnemucca. How many times do I have to tell you, Marsha? You can't be spreading that stuff here. But, right? So in general, no, that
so it's a workable problem.
No, it is a problem. Why? So the concern is as follows. The taste of the pig will be absorbed in the pot. And then when I cook the noodles afterwards, they're gonna have a little, you know...
Porky.
Right. A little geschmack of chaser that they're going to have. Right? And that would be a problem. In fact, it's true, right? If you buy these cast iron things, right, they specifically...
say, don't wash them.
Don't wash it because you want the flavor to go afterwards.
Well, actually, you want the fats to build up in the porous cast iron. But what about modern pots which are not porous?
At all?
Stainless steel is porous.
What?
Stainless steel isn't porous. Modern copper pots aren't porous.
What about Teflon?
Let's hold on.
Has a
you're not cooking.
Very complicated.
You're not cooking in Teflon.
No, but if it's scratched, it changes.
Right. So... the concern is, right, that the flavor is going to be absorbed into the pot, and then afterwards, when you cook next time, it's going to be deposited and transferred into whatever you're making next. That is the concern about it. That's why you can't use it. Now, and in fact, people do that specifically, the kavan, as we say, because they want the flavor to carry over in cast iron. There's definitely times that you want to do that. Now, the question is, though, I want the flavor to stay, but after a certain amount of time, just like it's like Limburger cheese, it tastes good the first day or two, but you leave it a few days outside of the fridge, right? Ain't what it used to be, right? So too, the Gemara says it's the same with everything. So the Gemara tells us that this idea of that it being a problem according to the Torah, that's only for 24 hours. Because after 24 hours...
is that tam lifgam at that point?
It's tam lifgam.
What does that
mean? Right? That means the tam, the taste, is lifgam, it's bad, it's pagum. Said, lo asra tol er kadera bas yoma. If I cook something, even if it's not kosher on it, the only problem going to the Torah is to use it within the next 24 hours. After 24 hours, everything automatically becomes kosher again. According to the Torah, your fleshik pots after 24 hours, they revert to being parv again. Your milchik pots revert to being parv again. According to the rules in the Torah, that's it.
That's amazing.
But if you made a mistake in a pot in your house, you would not use that pot again.
Let's discuss it. I said according to the Torah. Mm-hmm. Those of us who follow the Quran don't have this.
If you chew it, it makes
sense. So the Gemara tells us only in the first 24 hours it's a problem. The low lift gamu, then it's not a problem. The idach kaderas bas yom anami efshel lo pug reporta. Rashiva, my time. The ksiv lo sochu kol nevela la ger asher bisharecha kol ruya la ger kuya nevela. Says it only has to be something that would be good, that someone would want to eat. After it's sat out for 24 hours, it's not good anymore. Now, that's important, because you have to remember, if we're going to kosher this, there's a difference if something is treif according to the Torah, or not treif according to the Torah. Obviously, if it's not treif according to the Torah, it's going to be easy to make it not treif according to everybody. So in fact, the obvious question that people are wondering is, wait a second, how come the rabbis never told us about this before? Right? According to Irving, the rabbis have been wasting their time making up crazy cases. Why don't they just spend their time doing something useful, like make all our pots kosher after 24 hours? Right? That would be amazing. You go into, it would be very easy, you could go to a hotel, you know, and have a kosher event, just make sure nothing was done the last 24 hours, and we're set.
So, easy peasy.
So,
except we don't hold
so,
that.
So here's where it's a problem. The Gemara, later on in Avodah Zarah, tells far, if you go and you acquire, I go and buy myself a nice set of Calphalon pots on eBay, right? Lightly used. Okay?
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, so there it is. So are these pots kosher?
No.
Nope.
Right? Dvarim shechol nishtamish behem matlim behem tahorim. If you bought it new, you just have to take it to the mikvah. Easier said than done here. Dvarim shechol nishtamish behem al yidei tzonan. Things that you, in fact, use just for cold. Kegon kosos v'katonios v'tzruchios. For example, like cups. Right? The general rule is, if I buy, let's say I buy used juice cups, you have a right to assume that they were only used with cold. Because people do not put something hot in a juice cup because...
It might melt.
No, you can't hold it.
Can't hold.
Right? Right? You can't hold it. If it has a mug has a handle, you put hot things in that. A juice cup doesn't have a handle.
But how do I deal with the... I don't know how it was washed.
They wash it with lard?
They washed it and could be washed in hot.
Well, so again, probably not a problem. So if I just let's say it's a so I had this question one time. Someone's a Baal Tshuva came to me and they said, you just got a Yerusha from the grandmother. What did they get? A complete set of silver rimmed fine crystal shrimp glasses.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Shrimp is not a size, it's an animal.
It's a shrimp cocktail glass is what it is.
What? this is
Lee shrimp.
What?
Of course it's going to waste the shrimp.
What?
If there's lead in the crystal.
Doesn't matter. Right, so what would you say about this? So Dr. Kosher. Feldman, what do you say?
Kosher.
Kosher. Why is it kosher?
Because it's all cold.
It's all cold? Correct.
And it's crystal.
Right. In fact, so again, assuming you would never use your shrimp glass
right
for anything but cold, right, then in fact, that's what the Gemara says. You should wash it out, and that's it. Now it's kosher.
Also let it sit and then wash it out.
What? Not even.
Even?
Nothing got absorbed.
That's true.
Right?
What about?
Once you wash it, everything comes off. So that's... So he said, in the event it's something like that, an actual case I once had, just wash it off, it's good. See, and now the grandchildren became Bali Tshuva, and now they put the chopped liver in it. It's a beautiful thing. They're milder than it's Sotsus HaKadusha. It's a wonderful thing. Things that I put something warm in, Kegon HaYoros HaKum Kumusin V'machame Chamin, if it's something that I put in, that I used it for it, and it was, you put hot on it, like let's say a plate, right? Or forks and knives.
Say teacup.
What? Right? Or a teacup. Again, let's try to stay in the metals.
Okay, sorry.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? In those cases, what do? I put it into boiling water. I put it into boiling water, and that's enough. However, what about something that went directly on the fire? Right? So what happened was, right, let's say we would go and we would go for the eclipse. And of course you can't go anywhere and eat those without having a barbecue. So we're going to have a barbecue and we want to have a spit on it. And Augie's going to sit there spinning the cow. Right? So we can have a... That's the way it was.
Cow? Right? How about a goat?
But the problem is, we've worked on everything, but the only spit that we have was previously used for a chazer. With an apple, and the apple wasn't kosher. So.
Is it a metal spit or a wooden spit?
A metal spit.
Metal spit. Oh my
metal,
God.
Of course.
To hold that animal?
So, how do you kosher that?
Libun.
That has to be libun, correct. That has to go there. You have to blowtorch it, or you have to stick it in the fire. Right? So that's the rule. So there are three categories of how to kosher something, right? Something that is used for cold just has to be washed off. Something that is used for hot but indirectly, right, not on the fire, that goes into boiling water. That's called hagala. And the third thing is something that's used directly on the fire has to be used directly on the fire. That's called libun. as we'll see the different types of libum. So that's the kulon should shav them ad shlo yatpil shlo yagyo shlo yabin chaditana aser v'tani idoch muter. There's a machlokes. What if I didn't kasher it? Now I made food. Can I eat the food or not? So lo kasher. Ha command omer no sing tam lefkam aser. Ha command omer no sing lefkam muter. He says some people say no. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is if it's no sing tam lefkam, does that make it better? If I waited a certain amount of time. But wait a second. If that's the case, if no sin tam of gam is mutter, so why did the Torah tell us there's ever a problem? So the Gemara gives the obvious answer. Well, that's the reason. Only within 24 hours is a problem according to the Torah. The lav no sin tam of gamum. He says, okay, then the Gemara asks the question we've been asking for. Okay, so after 24 hours, so it should be mutter. I should be able to use treif dishes. I should use fleishik dishes for milchik and milchik dishes for fleishik if I waited 24 hours. Mikam ve'elach lishteri, so make it okay then. Gezeira kadeira sheina basyoma, v'shum kadeira ish kadeira basyoma. No, the rabbi stepped in and said it was a problem. Why was it a problem? Because you're going to get confused. You're going to get confused.
Don't be confused.
Right? I'm going to go. What's going to happen? Someone's going to come to my house, and they're going to see that I'm using the same pot for milchiks and the same pot for fleishiks. So they don't know that I'm waiting 24 hours in between. So they're not going to realize whether it's been 24 hours, it hasn't been 24 hours, right? I know yesterday I made chumut in this pot, and that's been 24 hours. I'm going to use it for milchiks. I don't realize that my wife made meat in between. So therefore, it's the rabbanan. So the answer is as follows. So when it comes to kashering, based on this, if you waited 24 hours and ready according to the Torah, it's okay. Then if you do a process by which you remove whatever is left, then you're okay. That is the story for it. So anything that is what we call isura bola, if there's something in it that was usser, first you wait 24 hours, that there's not a problem midaraisa, and then
you can deal with it.
Now, based on that, let me ask the obvious question. This is one of the most common rabbi questions you ever get. Okay? My husband doesn't usually cook. For some reason, he got this great idea that he's going to cook. And he went and he
took the wrong pan.
Kaif kabach the kitchen.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And he went and he made Shlomo, he made fleishiks in a milchik pot. What's the story now with the food? What's the story with the pot? What's the story with our marriage? So what would you say in this case? Right, this is probably the most common rabbi question out there. Okay, so what's the story? So that's what Tosfos wants to know. Tosfos says, so what happens in this case? So again, so the first question that you ask is, tell me, has the pot been used in the last 24 hours? And Racheli says, a milchik pot in our house, we haven't used this in Shavuos. Use it in 24 hours? We haven't used it in 24 days. That's right. We haven't used this in Shavuos. No, so what's the halacha in that case? So Tosfos says, in terms of the food is kosher. Right? The food does not have a problem at this point. Why? Because really, the whatever taste was no se tam with gam, and therefore it is bottle. It is erased by, since it's not doing anything positive, by the overall fleishiks that's in there. What about the pot?
That's treif.
Why is the pot treif? What? Right, the problem is it's not milchiks, it's not fleishiks.
I'd say kasher that pot.
Right. You got a problem. Right. Right. The fleishik, the pot has to be kasher because you can't use it for milk or for meat.
Right.
You can't use it for milk because you use it for meat. You can't use it for meat because you use it for milk. So the answer is you have to kasher the pot, but the food is good. That is the psak in that case.
What if you wait 24 hours again before you use it?
Well, again, we said
still can't.
we, because of the concern of getting confused, right, we don't use a pot that's been used for fleishigs even after 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there, that's the reason why waiting 24 hours is, right, this is still a milchig pot, and that's a milchig pot and a fleishig pot.
Okay, but now we're talking, to be clear, we're talking about a metal pot, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
And we're not talking about an earthenware pot, which would have to be...
Right, earthen, as we said, this is all the metal, because metal absorbs, and a metal also gives out. Because we there's a general rule here called kibolo kach bolto, right? The same way that it absorbs, it also spins out. Right, and that was the idea we said here. In the event it absorbed through fire, it'll split out through fire. If it absorbed through boiling liquid, it will give back through boiling liquid.
What about a pyrex with some glass?
Ah, so
pyrex is a special case because it's actually porous.
What? So when it comes to glass, there is a three-way machlokas. Some people say that glass does not absorb, and therefore you can use it both for milchiks and fleishiks. Some people say no, it absorbs, and it also
spits out.
Does not give. Emits, thank you. It's a
closer
word.
It's a better
term.
Right?
Spits. Right? So therefore, you can kasher. There's a third opinion that it's like klicheris, like pottery. It absorbs, but it doesn't
give back.
So we, in general, are machmir, right? We try, if you're going to use glass with something hot, right, we keep it either milchiks or fleishiks. However, there are opinions out there. So if someone says, I've got a Yerusha, right, this comes up sometimes, right? The Baba's milchik plates, right? The glass plates, and either we don't know how firm she was, or she was living with help, and we don't know what the help did to it, you know, or something like that. So if you're not sure, we say if you kosher it, you get two out of three opinions, and since it's a suffix, you're not sure, that's good enough.
With glass, is there a time? Seems like my grandmother had some dishes we inherited. We were convinced she hadn't used them in probably 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked the rabbi at the time, he says, if they haven't been used in 30 years, it's kind of like they're new.
So there is an opinion of the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi lived in the early 18th century, and he had an idea that after 12 months, even though 24 hours we don't rely on, 12 months we do rely on. Now, we generally don't rely on that opinion unless there's something else to go with it. So, for example, this is many... let's show of hands. How many people here don't eat kibrux?
Oh, that's a safe room.
I eat whatever they serve me on Pesach.
And when it's not Pesach? So, there are people in the world, I understand, who don't eat kibrux. But there
poor
are people
and they're
out
not
there
in this room
who do eat kibrux on the last day.
Right.
We know.
Where did that come from?
It's a couple of weeks.
Right. And then they tell you that it's been a year, but it's
right.
not.
It's a week
a
short.
Short a week.
Right. So again, so that minhag is based on this idea as well. After 12 months, it reverts back. Right. So again, in a case where you're not sure and you wait 12 months, you put that together, that would work as well.
Whenever you're not sure.
It's worse. Chametz bePesach, afil be'elef lo batal. Well, yeah. The answer is this is kidneys. Right.
Because otherwise, a flour particle.
But this is on Pesach. This would be.
No. But the next year, you're not using the dish again for the next year, so that this would happen before the next Pesach.
That's not so poshut. Yeah, this is important for kashering for Pesach, which we're not talking about. It's not really seasonal at this point.
But going back to glass, the truth is most glass is totally non-porous. Pyrex happens to be porous. So therefore, it should be considered like ceramicware.
So you got it.
So before, you're getting too far away from it, but
Pyrex,
I'm going to come back.
The way I understand it,
the
and
husband,
Rabbi, of course, is the expert, not I.
Shlomo, we'll call the husband Shlomo.
Anyway,
I'll wait till he's
Pyrex done. Must be either milk eggs or Fleischigs, and it must remain that way. And if it gets contaminated,
I don't think it's because it's porous. I think it's because you use it for hot. You actually use it.
What I've read from people online who are rabbis and scientists in the field said because it's porous.
I don't believe that.
Why don't we let Rabbi Rabbit continue?
Okay, I think there's a question that was...
I want to go back to the husband that made Fleischig in his wife's milk pot.
Yes.
What if the... And I understood what you said about the food is kosher, but you have to kosher the pot. What if it had been used within 24 hours?
If it had been used in 24 hours, then the food is not kosher also, either.
I just thought you should
correct.
Go on record.
Unless, of course, there is 60 times as much food as there is the...
Non-kosher.
As actually the size of the pot, right. Which mathematically is rare.
I was going to say, how can
very
you
rare.
Do that?
Right, not impossible.
60 times the volume of the pot. The volume needs to be 60 times the surface area.
Right.
Yeah. How can you have volume 60 times larger than surface area? That doesn't make sense.
Right. But
it's a mathematical nonsense.
Shlomo made an accident.
Nonsensical thing.
Okay. This is a wild room.
Oh boy. Okay.
How do you kosher a pot? Then you said it was.
So again,
to the fire, how would you just heat it up and that?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Right. So that one's boiling.
Will you serve that up like a Pyrex? Because I understand the glasses are pretty much like this, but what's with the mother?
So again, the general assumption is that Pyrex is the same as glass. Rabbi Tendler has a big discussion about glass. I think he believes, actually, and I could be getting this wrong, that the glass that they had in the time of the Gemara is what we call Pyrex, because it's borosilicon silicate, and that's silicon boroborocate. So, you know,
ask
or
your
not.
Wife.
You're talking Greek to me.
Well, no, it's Latin. So, right. So again, so he assumes that it's different for some reason. And
really,
yeah.
So
but again.
No,
you should just keep it different for both inflation.
Right.
Okay.
Keep it separate.
Yes.
Rabbi, so the patient before we see you had pork for lunch. In his teeth, embellished pork. And it's warm, right? Their mouth. Of course,
how warm is their mouth? Is it more than 113 degrees Fahrenheit?
Let's hope not.
That's what you call
if it's fire, more than 113 degrees Fahrenheit, you don't need to treat them very long.
So it's certainly not cold, so between their heat, of course, we sterilize his mouth. Is there an issue with that?
So again, one is I think the mouth is not, the mouth in order to absorb has to be Yad Soledis Bo. Right? Yad Soledis Bo is at least 104 degrees, we assume. Probably a little more than that. In the event that the mouth is 104 degrees, you probably should put off your dentist appointment to the next day. That's A. But B, if whatever, nothing makes you happier than going to the dentist and they think that this will have some, you know, positive effect on them, the fact that you sterilize it afterwards, so how do you sterilize it?
Scrub, ultrasonic, and then heat sterilize.
Right, so heat sterilize would kosher it. I imagine.
It's not 24 hours, though.
What?
It's not 24 hours.
So, again, it probably not go later.
It's not really anyway. I would
imagine. So,
good point.
Right. So.
But it doesn't have to be. It's just to be hot.
Next time I go, I like a fresh one. Fresh, you know. You know.
Certainly, gotta be hotter than water.
All right.
Talking about the tools?
Yes.
Okay. I believe so.
I believe so.
Okay.
Okay.
So what is there a difference you're talking about between regular glass and Pyrex?
I said there's no difference.
There's no difference.
Right. As far as I said Rabbi Tendler has an opinion. I heard him speak about it once many years ago. I can tell you how many years ago. He spoke about it in 1993. I remember this. It was very fascinating. When Soloveitchik passed away, that was in Pesach 93. Afterwards, for the next 30 days, they had a series of shiurim where a different student got up of every night in the Beis Medrash and spoke for an hour or five about their recollections of the Rav. And I remember it was very interesting. So some of the more right-wing students got up and said, the Rav Soloveitchik didn't hold this philosophy was a waste of his time. He just did it to keep people happy, but he was just Torah. Then other people came and said philosophy was his whole life. This is all what he existed for. He was a Torah Mada personality. And then Rabbi Tendler got up and said he was a man of science. That's what he really cared about. He cared, right? So I remember after 30 days of listening to these drushes, right? So Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who wasn't a rabbi at the time, I wasn't a rabbi at the time, and I'm older than him, came to me and said, I figured it out to what Rav Soloveitchik was.
It was the elephant.
He was a mirror. Right. You looked at him and you saw yourself. That, he said, there you go. He said, got it. So at the time, he gave this whole drasha about Rav Soloveitchik and Pyrex. That's why it was something about boros and silicates. Any idiot knows that. So thankfully, I wasn't an idiot. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So he holds otherwise. But in terms of the general, I think that's not the general opinion. Okay, the halachas of kashering appear twice in Shulchan Aruch. One time where you would expect to find them in Yeridea, we're talking about Basar B'cholov, and the second time, which even longer, where you would have expected it, is in Hilchos Pesach. In Hilchos Pesach, the Shulchan Aruch at length goes to how to kasher things. We'll give you the highlights here in number 6. So he says, basically, what the Gemara said: Sakin and Magilim Kli Rishon Umutarin. If I have a knife, if I have flatware, I just drop it in. How do I do that? The Kli Rishon Nishar Shaticho Bar Mayim Al Ha'esh. So someone comes over to me and says, Rabbi, you know, in that thing that Shlomo made, you know, let's say he went and Shlomo was eating his steak one night and he did it with a milchik knife. Right, he thought that all the flesh ones were, but these have been sitting around since Shavuos. Right, so he figured he's going to cut it. No, what's the story with the knife? So the knife, like the pot, is going to be treif, right? Because the knife was milchik, now it's flesh, so it can't be both. So you're going to have to kosher it. How do you kosher it? Very simple. You put up a pot of water, you bring it to a boil, you drop it in. Once it starts boiling, you drop it in. You can turn off the flame right there and then. It's done. There's no amount of time it has to sit there.
Have you heard of this one? To dip the knife 12 times in earth.
So, all right. So that's it's so interesting.
Now people go to bury it.
So it's not
a. Have a mucker or what?
Yes, it has a mucker. So
when do you heat up a rack?
We'll answer both questions.
That's a different one.
The Shulchan Aruch. We said the rule is the rule is kibolo kach polto. Right, the same way it gets in, it gets out. So if I use it to cut something warm, same idea. What if I took a milchik knife and I cut a hard salami in it? So in that case, even though it's cold, we assume because it's hard, there's pressure. And the pressure, the fat from the Romanian gets in there. So how do you get it out? So like it came in from pressure, it's got to come out of pressure. So you stick it into the hard ground. Somehow people think that everything. I remember when we were young, we were in a bungalow colony. I remember I was a young kid, maybe 7, 8 years old, and our neighbors grew silverware. Right? They had rolls of knives, they had rolls of forks. Right?
They buried it.
Right, so that's where it came from. That's the only case. Only if it was through pressure. If you cut something very hard, hard salami with, right, that's
cheese.
The only...
Cheese.
Right?
Cheese or something like hard cheese.
Right, hard cheese. There are so many hard cheeses out there. But those are the cases where you would have to. Anything else, you don't stick it in the ground. But there is this idea that people get confused regarding
the rock.
So the only time you need a rock is as follows. Let's say I'm koshering a pot, and I not only want to kosher, not only am I concerned that things are on the inside, but boiled over. So if it's a big pot, and I don't have a bigger pot, so how am I going to do it? Right? So what you do is if you put in a hot stone, assuming you put it in, it's going to boil over very hot. Right, from the pot itself. You're not koshering the brick.
That's what's inside.
You're not koshering the brick. You're koshering that.
No, but I'm saying it's not for the knives and forks that you're koshering.
Right. Someone came over. It's interesting because someone came over tonight who didn't stay. and said, you know, they like that we should, at one point, have a set of shirim on, he enjoys the medical halacha, he wants legal halacha. He wants the case that we should discuss that. So I remember the following, this is an actual what?
You're very short, Chief.
I remember the... It's mostly focused in criminal justice. So the...
Business ethics.
Right, it's like the story about, you know, the book about the Jewish sports heroes. It's a two-page pamphlet.
Right.
So the following... This is an actual case. I remember reading this as
what
when I was
year?
A lawyer.
No, I'm kidding.
What happened was... There is a certain federal penitentiary in the New York metropolitan area, which has not only a minyan, it has an Ashkenaz and a Sfarad minyan, and has multiple daf yomis. A great Kiddush Hashem.
But they're balei tshuva. They're going to be better.
So in the case, actually, I was doing research for a pro bono case, and this case came up. What happened was... They were koshering the kitchen for Pesach in this penitentiary.
Oh my God.
And they brought in a mashgiach, and they had a problem because they had a shita that they wanted to heat up the brick and every time they heated up the brick nearly that hot, it exploded before they could put it in. So the mashgiach said, "You don't need the brick. You know, the brick is only for certain cases. It's kosher without it." And this guy appealed to the court and says, I'm not going to rely on this guy's coolness. I have to go home for Pesach because it's not kosher enough for me in this penitentiary.
What was he in for, Rabbi?
What?
Murder.
Anti-Semitism. You know the prisons are full of innocent people.
You have to ever kosher the outside of the pot?
Right, that's what we're talking about. In a case where it overflows, right, that's when you would do
what is the actual, outside? I mean, but you know, logic. If I now take a pot, and I now dump silverware, and I now want to kosher, what does the pot become?
What?
Logically, what should the pot become?
So the pot actually becomes nothing. It does
right.
not. It does,
goes back
because there's a concept again. This is beyond the scope of it. But it's something called not bar not, no same tam bar no same tam. The I put something not kosher into the pot, it gets absorbed by the walls. The walls, when they release obviously a much lighter version of the original one. Mm-hmm. Right, so much lighter that it affects the food that it goes directly into by the fact that it now goes from food to pot to food to pot. By the time it hits that last pot, it doesn't affect it.
All right.
That
it's like Beetle
Barone.
It's dilute enough.
Right. It has been weakened enough that it's not an issue. Okay, so how hot does it have to be? It has to be boiling. Once it's boiling, that's fine.
But boiling basically means one bubble.
What?
Boiling means rolling.
I mean, yeah, it's
not one bubble.
It's interesting. That means you can be more makel in Colorado than you can elsewhere. Right. So again, what?
It boils at a lower temperature. Boils at a lower temperature.
Right. Right. It's a lower temperature. Right. Right. It's interesting. I've never heard this. Yeah. Oh, an excellent question.
Finish the pot in the boiler.
It's like a giant boiling pot because the water is coming in and boiling.
So I believe that you can kosher a stainless steel dishwasher.
Right. You can use kosher utensils in a stainless steel dishwasher.
So again, if it gets hot enough,
if the racks
yeah,
are,
I
if
mean,
the racks
how
are
hot does the water get? I don't think it gets boiling. Because I remember we had an issue here in Colorado a few years back.
How hot is boiling? Yeah.
Right, and in fact, the issue was as follows, that I think, in general, dishwashers can get as high as 180 degrees the water, not 212. However, it was a matter of a certain venue that... was not generally kosher, that was being koshered for a certain shul's dinner. And at the time, one of the issues that came up is they had adjusted the dishwasher that it wasn't getting as hot. They had lowered it from 180 to 175. And there's a question, is could we ask them to turn it up to 180 one time to run a koshering cycle, that it would be okay. But I remember all of them, none of them went over 180. But again, that goes both ways. So in general, take the case of a dishwasher. Let's say it's stainless steel. Let's say it can be koshered. So if the hottest it's going to get when it's running is 180, one can make an argument that koshering only needs 180. Right? Kabbalah, kach polto, right? That's the same issue with an oven. Right? Again, all of these topics deserve their own shear. But an oven, if you have a self-cleaning oven,
mm-hmm.
right, that can get up to 1,000 degrees. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Problem. What if you don't have a self-cleaning oven?
Get one.
Right? right? So
what does it go up to 500 or something?
Right. Right. So one can make an argument that if you turn it on full blast for an hour, it's you never cooked anything hotter than that.
That's true.
Right? That would be kibolo kach polto. The argument can be made that whatever as hot as it can get is, well, that as high as it could have gotten when it got in. So that's the argument about that.
And that's without having to scrub that oven.
Well, again, obviously, you
self-clean. Right?
First things first is before you kosher anything, it's got to be clean. Right? If you still have the lard on it, you've got a problem. Right? You should wipe it off at least. Right? So too, if you're going to kosher an oven, right? Let's say you're koshering it for Pesach, whatever else, first thing you do is use the easy off. Right? And get it all out of there. That, you wait 24 hours. Now what you don't necessarily, there are opinions that say that you don't have to wait 24 hours if you are, in fact, using the easy off. Because the easy off is pogame whatever was absorbed. Well, let's say I cooked a roast in it yesterday. The roast might be good for 24 hours, but once I add easy off into the mix, it's not as tasty as it was beforehand. Right? So that's the argument. Similarly, when I'm washing dishes, if I'm using a detergent, a strong argument that is pogame. Question, Rabbi, I accidentally washed my milchig
cup
together with the fleishig dishes. What's the story with that? And first question that I usually ask is, were you wearing gloves when you did your dishes? Or you were just washing it with hands?
I thought it was in the dishwasher.
What? No, it's you washing it by hand.
Oh, we're talking hand washing. Okay.
Hand washing. Right? Okay. What's if you're not using gloves, it can't be Yad Soletis. Right. It couldn't have gotten that hot.
That's right.
Because you stuck your hands in it.
Right.
Yad Soletis is a very interesting idea. I mean, you would actually, it depends. You know that the water is hot, do you expect it to be hot or not? That's quite a very wide
correct.
Range.
There is,
and there are people who have greater tolerance.
Right, so Yad Soletis, we assume, is in a case where you don't know that it's hot. As opposed to Yad Nichvis, we assume that even if you know that it's hot, it would be a problem.
So answer the question about the cup in the fleishik?
Right. So the assumption is that in the event you accidentally put milchiks into your fleishik dishwasher, you know, etc., we tend to be b'dieved mekel on that as well, because what are the, it's not really getting cooked in it. Your concern is that your schmutz is going to come off, and then it's going to go back. But not really
too hot
going to happen. So that's one.
So can I use that cup back with my milchix?
Yes, you should. Okay. So l'chachila, you shouldn't have done this.
Right.
But
b'dieved. Right, got it.
B'dieved, we would say that it's okay.
Got it.
Okay. So that's Hagola. Now, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that, so then next thing Shulchan Aruch talks about is Liban. How hot does Liban have to be? It has to glow.
Blowtorch.
Right? The Ramah says, the Ramah is actually a little bit more mekel. He says it has to be hot enough that if you took a piece of straw and you touched it, the straw would catch fire. That's pretty hot.
Really hot.
Right? However, in the event that I have something and I don't want to do Hagola on it, so obviously Liban would work, right? Liban, but not only that, but the type of Liban that gets that call is called Liban Chomer. It has to be glowing that hot. If I just heat something up to what we believe is, I think we assume is 450 degrees, that's called Liban Kal, a lighter form of Liban. That's as good as Hagola. So if Hagala would work, Liban Kal would work as well. So again, if there's a reason why I'd rather... So let's say...
450 degrees.
Yeah, that's what the...
But Hagala is only 212.
But it's liquid also.
Right, this is a solid thing. In.
Right?
Wow.
So
like
I've always been interested... What? A Bochosh would be Liban Chomer, I assume. Right? My dad told me... that he remembers as a young man, he used to make a few bucks by going around and kashering with a blowtorch. He said that's what they used to do. But most people assume that that's not a good thing to do because
in
every spot, it's dangerous. He said he was this guy whose nickname was Filthy Fass, who owned some sort of restaurant. And he said the amount of grease in that thing, and whenever you touched it with the thing,
why would you actually have to now heat something to glowing?
Let's say it's a grate on your stove.
In fact, okay, it never, ever had reached that kind of temperature.
That's a question.
So
a pizza oven?
Even a pizza oven.
He's right.
Also not true. If a pizza oven ever reached the temperature of glowing metal, you wouldn't have pizza.
Right.
But it doesn't have to reach that. The idea is anything that there is direct contact, pretty much between the fire, the whatever you're using, the grates, let's say.
Grates.
Let's say your barbecue, right? So your barbecue, you're putting meat directly on the metal, and the fire is directly on
right
it.
Right under it.
Right? So in order to get it out, you require...
That grate will never get as
I understand,
hot,
but that's
because
the rule.
You got the meat on.
Right, so
it just doesn't work. I mean,
right. So in general,
there's a point though in what he's saying. Modern metals, due to metallurgy, we don't need to heat up to the point where they're glowing. When they had greater impurities in the past, they might have.
Okay, so the assumption is anything that is directly by fire, you have to heat it by fire. It's interesting when you have a case like that. So, what the recommendation is throw it into an oven and set it on
on
self clean.
Self clean.
On self clean. Exactly. That's the way to get it done.
And that's certainly over 450.
That's about 1,000, right?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
1,000,
yeah, so.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between 800 and 1,000.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Right. So again, you get it up there, that's fine. Okay. Obviously, there's a lot more to talk about here, and it's not getting any earlier. I just wanted to really focus on one other issue. Yeah. So the topics of glass, the topic of Teflon, the topic of ovens in general. These all deserve their own. I just wanted to give the basic background. However, a question that comes up oftentimes that I get that I wanted to talk a little bit is the idea of kashering from milchiks to fleishiks or vice versa. The Magen Avraham comments that in number 8 that you can't kasher from milchiks to fleishiks or fleishiks to milchiks, right? Technically, it should be fine. Right, we're having guests over Friday night.
You decide you need an extra pot for fleishiks.
I need new silverware. Right, I don't have enough silverware. Right, so what am I going to do? It's not hard. You boil the water and just dump my milchik silverware into the pot, and now it's parv, and it became, and I can use it for fleishik. The Magen Avraham says you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because you're going to get confused. My kids will know what the milchik silverware looks like. Right, all of a sudden it's fleishik. They're going to use it again for
cheese.
They're going to use it for their cheese, etc. Right, all of a sudden we're going to have a problem here. So you can't go from milchiks to fleishik, vice versa, because it's going to lead to confusion. There are those who argue on the Magen Avraham, who say you can't make up your own gezeiros. Right, the Gemara never mentioned it. What gives you the right to say it? But we generally follow it. However, there are a list of cases where we do allow us to do it. So, for example, if you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah says when you kasher things for Pesach, once you're kashering anyhow, you can switch from milchiks to fleishiks.
And the Mishnah Berurah is not usually makel.
No, not so bad. You know, that's what he says. Similarly, the Prima Gadim goes a step further. He says, if I trafed it, and I have to kosher it anyhow, so it becomes naturally parv, and I can switch it as well. He in fact says in number 10, Ulahagil mi basar echal, if I want to go from milk, from meat to milk, no gil lahashrif mi kodem. Fatrafe it first. Take it and stick it in, stick it. You go across, you say, Tima Toiva.
That's too weird.
Pete, you got some trafe I could borrow. Stick my, should I stick my silverware in it? And then you can do it as well. The Maharsham has a tshuva about this. The Maharsham is a big mekel, in fact. And the Maharsham writes that there are several ways you can accomplish this, right? One thing that he suggests, he says, he points out, is that you can always kasher the parv. Anything that you have,
zero.
Right? You can make it parv. Why? Because I'm not going to get confused. I'm using it for parv now, and it's really milchitz. I'm going to use it for parv now, right? It's not a matter that I'm using it for milchitz and flations back and forth. If I use it for parv and milchitz back and forth, that's not such a problem.
Right, but if you make it parv, can at that point from parv then?
Right. So can you do the two step?
Yeah, meaning going flation to parv.
So in fact, he seems to indicate that the two step works as well.
Why not just peel out from flation to milchitz?
No, you have to use it for some time as parv. Whenever you go from fleshy to milk, inevitably it's going to be parv in between.
Right.
But you have to be using it for some time in between. You have to use it for a while, that people have to get used to it being parv.
This applies only to silverware?
Well, anything that you're going to kosher. Like what else?
Could be a pot. It could be a pot.
A pot, a pan.
You can use a pot, etc.
You know, I had a pot that was, I haven't used in 5 years, that was a Pyrex. That's why I asked you. Uh-huh. Pyrex, and I wanted to use it for fleshy.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a rabbi, and he said, absolutely not. He looked up and said, no, you cannot use that pot that you haven't used 5 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would understand why the person is machir, but I would also understand if someone was mako, given that it's been more than 12 months,
right,
as Rabbi Wolf pointed out, and also given the fact that, you know, there are opinions out there that glass doesn't need to be koshered, and even if it doesn't, and even if it needs to be, it can be koshered, right? So you put that all together. You know, and I would think that there are people that would be makeup, but also I'd also understand is, what does it cost? $10? Right?
15.
20?
Right? They don't make them anymore.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is there are definitely different reasons to be lenient in this case, but, you know, there's also reasons to go the other way. I can hear it both ways.
Pyrex is a thick glass. Yes, well, it's not a thin.
Right.
So why would you say it's porous? It's very thick.
I don't think that. I don't think it is. Right. The thickness has nothing to do with our porous.
But you can bake in pyrex. Right, you cannot bake in glass.
Literally a cast iron pot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that have a different halacha? Let's say.
Definitely coated stainless steel.
Yeah,
but it's interesting. From a, I don't
so again,
know,
I've always been interested in this
logical point of view.